The village health post is usually the best expression of an active community participation. Just as the community health worker is preferably chosen for training by the villagers themselves, it's also preferable for the village health post to be built by the villagers themselves. It gives them an active sense of participation. Like the school, the market, or the grain store, the village health post is an important part of communal development. People are better motivated when personally involved. Traditional medical practitioners and birth attendants, see slide, are found in most societies. Forming part of the local community, culture and traditions, they continue to have a high social status in many places and exert considerable influence on local health practices. People trust them because they live among them. Moreover, their services are less expensive than those of modern scientific medicine. They are the first recourse of poor village people. For this reason, in countries where the number of doctors and health auxiliaries is insufficient, traditional doctors and midwives could and should provide the front line of health workers. Once prejudices are discarded, and with the support of the formal health system, indigenous practitioners can become invaluable allies in improving the health of the community. The same is true of traditional medicine, especially herbal remedies made of medicinal plants, already grown, collected and manufactured in many parts of the world, and which often have proved as efficacious as chemical and pharmaceutical compounds, and much cheaper. While lack of technology forces governments to buy expensive pharmaceutical substances abroad, the simplest of equipment suffices to prepare traditional herbal medicaments. Traditional Chinese medicine has long proved to be a great storehouse of knowledge, stemming from ancient wisdom. Apart from medicinal plants, there are many other aspects of traditional medical practice which could fruitfully be further explored by the supporters of modern scientific medicine. Acupuncture, for instance, is just one of many. These considerations of tradition lead naturally to another very much discussed subject, appropriate technology, which is also a vital part of PHC. Technology should be in keeping with local culture. It is an advantage if equipment and drugs can be manufactured locally at low cost. Also, the maintenance of equipment should preferably be handled by local people with on-the-spot facilities. Indigenous materials can often be used and are easily renewed. Appropriate does not mean second-rate technology. It means that besides being scientifically sound, the technology is also acceptable to its users and to the people for whom it is used. Immunisation, especially of children, is one of the most important aspects of PHC. 5 million children die each year for lack of immunisation. Of the 80 million children born each year in the developing world, only 10% of them, at best, are immunised against the 6 common childhood diseases: measles, diphtheria, whooping cough, tetanus, TB and polio. And yet, vaccines against these diseases do exist. They represent one of the triumphs of science and technology. Effective and relatively low-cost biological products are now available for all 6 diseases. To immunise against all 6 diseases, in fact, to protect a child for life, does not cost much, about $3. However, such vaccines often remain unused in most developing countries. The WHO expanded programme of immunisation aims at no less than vaccinating all the world's children against these 6 diseases by 1990. One of the greatest triumphs of immunisation and of appropriate technology is the successful worldwide campaign for the eradication of smallpox. From the time when Dr. Edward Jenner, see slide, discovered the smallpox vaccine in 1796, to the last known case, detected in Somalia in 1977, it took 181 years to get rid of the scourge, a resounding premiere in the story of mankind. Previously, millions of people, especially children, died or were disfigured for life, to say nothing of their suffering. 2 years after the last case was detected, treated and cured, the Global Commission for Certification of Smallpox Eradication, a group of scientists from 19 nations, met in Geneva at the end of 1979 and certified that smallpox had actually disappeared from the whole of the globe's surface. While the total cost of the worldwide smallpox eradication campaign was about $300 million, the economic benefit derived from the discontinuation of compulsory vaccination throughout the world amounts to $1 billion annually. In addition to the considerable work of confinement and surveillance carried out by more than 600 WHO staff and consultants from 51 nations, and more than 150,000 national health staff in all countries concerned, in addition to the political will of the nations affected and the international cooperation which permitted, for the first time in human history, such a wonderful result, the smallpox eradication campaign was also a success of combined appropriate technology. The question now is, how can lessons learned from the worldwide campaign for the eradication of smallpox be applied to other diseases? Can we now attack more effectively the multitude of major health problems still confronting us? This is the aim and purpose of the WHO Special Programme for Research and Training in Tropical Diseases, TDR for short. In the meantime, have a last look at this picture. We are ready to bet $1,000 that you will never see this again. However, not all diseases are as easy to combat and vanquish as smallpox. For some of the most widespread and lethal ones, especially in the Third World, preventive vaccines do not yet exist. It is difficult to control such diseases on a mass scale because of the scarcity, toxicity, low effectiveness, and high cost of the drugs presently available. The recognition of the failure to combat these diseases led WHO, UNDP and the World Bank to set up in 1977 a special program for research and training in tropical diseases in order to encourage all researchers in developing as well as in developed countries to search for better and cheaper drugs and possible vaccines for 7 prevalent and, until now, neglected diseases, namely malaria, schistosomiasis, filariasis, including onchocerciasis, trypanosomiasis, both African sleeping sickness and the American form called Chagas disease, leishmaniasis, and leprosy. Do not think that leprosy is a scourge of the past. It still affects 11 million people in the world, including children. The present strategy for control, based on early detection and treatment with Dapsone or DDS, has not led to a decrease in the incidence of the disease. In many places, ancestral fear and social stigma attached to leprosy result in the tendency on the part of patients and their relatives to conceal and sometimes even to reject or ignore the disease because of its psychosocial implications. It will take at least another 10 to 15 years of patient and unrelenting work before a vaccine against leprosy is ready for wide use. Scientists are also looking for new and better drugs, new and better tests for diagnosis, and improved methods of treatment. Schistosomiasis, bilharzia, is a debilitating parasitic disease mainly affecting children. It is caused by a fluke transmitted through water snails and strikes several hundred million people throughout the world. It is often man-made, increasing as population grows and as water resources, especially irrigation, develop. Factors influencing the fight against schisto range from health education as related to human behaviour, populations have to be taught how to avoid contact with the vector, the improvement of water and sanitary facilities, people have to be taught not to urinate or defecate in water, and the development of specific measures such as better drugs, tests and possible vaccines, to say nothing of chemicals to kill the snail vector without polluting the environment. The international pharmaceutical industry has shown interest in searching for new drugs to combat schisto. Filariasis is the general name for diseases caused by tiny worms that infect many millions of people, sometimes causing blindness, as in onchocerciasis or river blindness, or elephantiasis, or general ill health. More effective methods, drugs or vaccines are needed to prevent these diseases, to treat people who are infected, and to control the insect vectors of these thread-like worms. A network of laboratories to screen potential anti-filarial compounds has already been established. Centres for clinical research have been set up in tropical areas. New drugs are being developed in cooperation with the pharmaceutical industry. Close liaison has been established with the ongoing Onchocerciasis Control Programme, OCP, in West Africa, especially with respect to the testing of drugs. The search for a vaccine has started. Malaria is one of the most ancient scourges of mankind. Some 150 million registered cases occur annually. In Africa alone, 1 million children die of it every year. In the mid-50s, it was thought for quite some time that it would be possible to eradicate the disease from the face of the earth. But malaria reappeared. Today, the world malaria situation is causing serious concern, mainly because of the spread of parasite resistance to drugs and that of mosquito vectors to insecticides. New tools in the form of more effective drugs, vaccines and improved diagnostic tests are urgently required. Research is necessary to determine the best possible use of existing and new tools. As part of the new global anti-malaria strategy, a major effort is also currently being made to improve existing methods of malaria control in the field. The TDR, with strong support from the world's scientific community, has mounted a substantial programme of research. Among its objectives is the development of a vaccine against malaria. Although work on this is fairly advanced, it will take another 5 to 10 years before such a vaccine can be of use in the field. As can be noticed, 5 of the 6 diseases in the TDR programme are vector-borne. Malaria and filariasis by mosquitoes, onchocerciasis by a tiny fly, Simulium damnosum, sleeping sickness by the tsetse fly, schisto by snails, leishmaniasis by sand flies. This shows the importance in WHO of a discipline called vector biology and control, VBC, which deals with the ecology and behaviour of insect vectors and other intermediate hosts, snails, rats, etc. One of the aims of VBC is to identify, develop and apply safe and inexpensive biological agents for the control of these vectors and intermediate hosts, in order to palliate their resistance to existing pesticides. Vector-borne diseases can be considered as diseases of the environment of man. Other factors in the environment also play their role in the dissemination of diseases. Water is perhaps the most important of them. The first waterborne disease is cholera, known the world over for proliferating particularly in the slums of big cities. See slide. Over the past 20 years, cholera has been reported by some 80 countries in Asia, Africa, and Europe. It has become endemic in areas where water supplies and sanitation facilities are inadequate, and where there is already a high incidence of acute diarrheal disease. Although most cases are mild, cholera can spread fast and be fatal if left untreated. Acute diarrheal diseases, of which cholera is only one, constitute one of the greatest social evils of the Third World. Not only do they kill children, but they also retard their growth and impair forever the quality of life of those who survive. The problem is overwhelming and complex, as it involves deep-rooted cultural and behavioural factors, especially in the field of nutrition, to say nothing of the more obvious social and economic inequalities. Despite widespread awareness of this problem, there has until now been a lack of commitment to deal with it. The main lines of WHO's Global Programme for Diarrheal Diseases Control, CDD, consist mainly of oral rehydration systems, ORS, for the treatment of diarrheas, especially in children. Many countries are already using this system. WHO and UNICEF are collaborating with governments in formulating country programmes for the promotion of oral rehydration in order to reduce mortality and the effects of malnutrition. While environment can be said to be the cause of much ill health, it is also undeniable that bad environment is often the fault of man himself. The more people there are on the planet Earth, the more goods they will consume, and the more the environment will become polluted. Contaminated water, along with inadequate sewage and other waste disposal facilities, insufficient food hygiene and inadequate housing, are the principal problems in poor urban and rural areas. Environmental pollution caused by modern industrial and agricultural practices is adding appreciably to health hazards. In big cities like this, see slide, waste can only be disposed of by municipal authorities. At the village level, waste disposal is a problem for the villagers themselves, with the advice and help of the community PHC worker. With regard to the disposal of wastes, the WHO concept of PHC puts great emphasis on the building of individual latrines for the safe disposal of human wastes. Most people in the Third World lack facilities for sanitary disposal of human excreta, and thus remain constantly exposed to intestinal infections carried by polluted water and other transmission agents, such as flies. One of the two main means of avoiding the vicious circle of parasitic diseases, fatal to millions of children, is the building of a latrine for each family house, either indoors or outside. The other consists of providing the community with a safe water supply. If the treatment of diarrheal diseases, as previously stated, is a simple problem of curative medicine, oral rehydration, the prevention of such diseases can only be complete by providing all people in the world with a safe water supply. About 80% of the people inhabiting the rural regions of the developing world have no access to safe water. At any one time, some 400 million people are estimated to be suffering from gastroenteritis. Chemical pollution of water through industrial and agricultural wastes is a growing concern. The projected growth of the world's population from 4 to 6,000 million by the end of the century, and the shift from rural to urban areas, can only emphasise the urgency and enormity of the problem. The UN has designated the period 1981 to 1990 as the International Drinking Water Supply and Sanitation Decade. WHO strongly hopes that by the year 1990, all people of the world will have access to clean water, one way or another, thanks to the use of simple, appropriate technology. The concern over man's environment is justified the world over. Air and water pollution are problems for all countries, whatever their rate of development, although sometimes for very different reasons. Concerned at the acute, chronic, and sometimes delayed toxic effects of chemicals in air, water, food, and other consumer products, and at the place of work, WHO initiated in 1973 a programme on environmental health criteria, in close collaboration with some 25 national focal points and the United Nations Environment Programme. It aims at providing information on environmental health risks as a basis for formulating national standards and for other action to control and improve the quality of the human environment. WHO has set itself the goal of reducing air, water and soil pollution and exposure to noise and ionising radiations to levels that do not endanger health and, whenever possible, without interfering unduly with social, economic and technical development. In all fields of environmental pollution monitoring and control, the transfer of technology, not only from developed to developing countries, but also among developing countries themselves, TCDC, is an important component. Environment is also the place of work. Workers have a right to be protected. Without a healthy working place, productivity is low. As from 1976, a new orientation has been endorsed for the Occupational Health Programme of WHO, often carried out in cooperation with ILO. This recognises the impact of occupational health on both the health and economic status of developing countries. The work of industrial or occupational doctors and hygienists consists of recognising, evaluating and controlling health hazards in the work environment and of applying the findings in work situations. What, for instance, are the maximum acceptable levels of toxic substances in a given industry? The task is formidable, since workers are exposed to thousands of potentially harmful agents. One of the challenges in this field is the development of simple, reliable methods to detect noxious substances in the work environment. Another problem of universal concern, both in poor and rich countries, is that of oral health. Tooth decay still tops the list as the most widespread disease in the world today. The WHO Global Oral Data Bank indicates that a rapid increase in dental caries is now occurring in developing countries, and health administrations in all countries are faced with oral disease problems. A new programme for the prevention of oral diseases was launched by WHO in 1976. The WHO Research Programme on Oral Health studies the basic causes of caries and how to deliver dental health services. The results provide a valid basis for planning new oral health services and/or improving existing ones. Mental health the world over is mainly concerned with the influence of psychosocial factors on the life of individuals and communities. Adverse effects of uprooting, occurring as a result of rapid social change, migration and resettlement of populations, are well known. Detribalization, for instance, gives rise to slums, see slide, especially at the periphery of large cities. The WHO program on psychosocial aspects of the human environment aims at studying the factors threatening family life and how stress-laden facets of life affect vulnerable individuals in different socio-cultural settings. It also aims at preventing and reducing social disabilities in people suffering from mental disorders. Nevertheless, recent progress in care and treatment has provided powerful means for attenuating mental disorders in a large number of patients. Developed countries also have their health problems. Although they may appear different from those of the third world, it is only statistically so. Non-communicable diseases, such as heart disease or cancer, also exist in poor countries, but they are still overwhelmed by communicable diseases, which therefore constitute a priority for governments and health authorities. Cancer, cardiovascular diseases, diseases of the heart and blood vessels, mental disorders and metabolic diseases, some of them sometimes called diseases of civilization, affect developed and developing countries alike, and they exact an enormous toll in terms of human suffering and cost to the economy. To this sad list can be added other causes of death and disablement, such as accidents, particularly traffic accidents, and smoking, perhaps the two largest single preventable causes of ill health, disability and death in the world today. Among cardiovascular diseases, hypertension is probably the most widespread condition leading to serious heart disease if not treated. Also called high blood pressure, it is a silent, secret threat to the health of people all over the world. Hypertension can be dangerous in itself because it often passes unnoticed, since it presents no symptoms in its early stages. However, its complications are among the most important causes of death and incapacity. Yet although this is common knowledge in the health profession, and the means to control this condition do exist, the largest part of the population at risk is unaware of it and is not being helped to learn. A network of collaborating centres has been established by WHO to study the possibility of community control for hypertension. Different methods are applied and compared. In particular, WHO advocates approaches that can be easily adapted to the socio-economic conditions of developing countries. Where the community has a strong will to combat the problem and to set up a program using a variety of means, it is estimated that thousands of lives can be saved each year through hypertension control. Nutrition problems in developed countries are unlike those of developing countries. Overeating is just another form of malnutrition, peculiar to rich and industrialized countries, where it is a leading cause of cardiovascular disease. Doctors have found a correlation between obesity and heart disease. We know that being overweight not only encourages high blood pressure, but also raises the level of cholesterol in the blood and can lead to the possible appearance of diabetes. If there is excess weight, daily eating habits must be assessed. The patient himself must try to correct the imbalance. In practice, this means a cut in the calorie intake, particularly as regards saturated fats, alcohol, and sugar. It also means a reduction in fatty food added to the diet, such as butter, cooking oil and margarine, and the replacement, as far as possible, of fatty animal products by lean animal products. A larger part of the daily diet should consist of fruit, salads, and vegetables. One of the best ways of combating cardiovascular diseases is the practice of physical exercise. All doctors recommend an increase in daily physical activity, particularly walking. Although there is no clear-cut proof that physical activity actually prevents cardiovascular disease and prolongs life, regular physical exertion, up to a certain intensity, is needed for the human body to function satisfactorily. It is now agreed that physical activity ought to be considered within the framework of healthy life habits. It should not be aimed only at improving cardiovascular health, but should envisage better health in general. It is then very likely that life expectancy too will increase, while the risk of developing myocardial infarction, heart attack, will decrease. In Finland, for instance, see slide, community heart health programs include common meals and common exercise. There is not one cancer. There are about 100 different cancers. In many developed countries, cancer occupies the second place after cardiovascular diseases among causes of death. Means of fighting cancer have greatly increased in recent years, and more cases than usually thought can be cured if detection is early and treatment started in time. But there are still many unanswered questions, and investigations are proceeding all over the world to try and find the answers. Advances in the knowledge of cancer therapy can only come from experimenting with new treatments, and clinical trials are generally acknowledged as being the most efficient mechanisms for this purpose. One of WHO's roles is to coordinate the results of anti-cancer activities and make them known to the international community. Other WHO programs aim at identifying causes of cancer, improving methods of treatment, standardizing the registration and reporting of cases, publishing nomenclatures and atlases of tumors, and providing consultancy services for the formulation of national cancer control plans. Basic research is the domain of the International Agency for Research on Cancer, IARC. It was established in 1965 by the World Health Assembly as an independently financed organisation within the framework of the WHO. The headquarters are at Lyon, France, and the research centres in Iran, Kenya and Singapore. The work of the agency is mainly concerned with discovering carcinogenic substances which play a part in the development of the disease, since, according to IARC findings, 80% of cancers are thought to be due to factors present in the environment, the effects of which could thus be prevented. The agency is also concerned with forms of cancer that have an unusual or unexplained geographical distribution, a field of research in which an international approach is indispensable, with the role of viruses in cancer, with the relationship between alcohol consumption and cancer, with the collection of data on cancer incidents throughout the world, and many other problems. Field studies in different parts of the world are supplemented by biological and chemical research carried out in the agency's laboratories in Lyon, and, through collaborative research agreements, in national research institutions in many countries. The agency also conducts a programme for the education and training of personnel for cancer research. WHO does not stand alone. Most of its activities are carried out through international scientific cooperation in the form of expert committees, drawn from 47 expert panels, totalling about 2,600 scientists and collaborating centres. Few, if any, countries can be self-sufficient in the various sectors of science and technology involved in the production, application and generation of new knowledge required for the process of development. Cooperative undertakings at regional, international and global levels are therefore highly desirable. In the health field, this has been accomplished with appreciable success by the establishment of regional and global networks of collaborating centres in various health disciplines. This has been done with the technical guidance of experts from all countries, developed and developing, grouped in expert committees. International scientific cooperation is, however, a two-way flow, and great care must be taken to ensure that such cooperation contributes primarily to the self-reliant development of less technically advanced countries. In undertaking international scientific cooperation, care must be taken to avoid abuses of developing countries, which would tend to perpetuate their dependence on developed countries, transfer of technology, and which could compromise their political and economic independence. The developed countries, international organisations, and funding agencies therefore have great responsibility in ensuring that international scientific cooperation is carried out with the interests of developing countries kept paramount in mind. On Spaceship Earth, as Dr. Mahler likes to say, world health is indivisible, and WHO is its unifying agent. Speaking before the World Health Assembly, he took the unusual step of appealing directly to the political leaders of the world by telling them, "Health aspirations are less politically controversial than most other social aspirations. Let us then exploit together to the full this measure of national and international political agreement. The pursuit of health is not as marginal as political priorities would seem to indicate. By striving for health, you will be promoting development, for development is only real if it provides relief from social as well as economic pain. Make WHO's goal of health for all by the year 2000 the world social goal for the end of the 20th century." And Dr. Mahler concluded his appeal by saying, "Political leaders of the world, use the neutral ground of health to promote global development dialogue. WHO has already shown, in shaping its policies, that such dialogue among countries of all shades of political ideology is not only possible, it is also highly fruitful. Use health as a lever for social and economic development. More than that, use it as a platform for peace. The far-sighted constitution of our organisation declared more than 30 years ago, the health of all people is fundamental to the attainment of peace and security. If you can find one subject on which the people of the world can agree across national barriers and in spite of political and ideological differences, exploit it to the full." World health can be that subject.